Welcome to the Brainstorm, episode 86. We've got David Guo. We can't say the Bitcoin price target forecast in 2030, but we can break down how we got there. And so, David, can you take us through some of the methodology? Maybe we just lost half the listeners who just wanted a big number thrown out there, but this is for the people who actually care about how you did the research.
Yeah, so it's simple when you think about it. Basically, what we did is trying to assess the most pertinent total addressable markets for the Bitcoin use case, which are six. So it's investment portfolios, institutional investment, digital gold, emerging market safe haven, nation state treasuries, corporate treasuries, and what we call the on-chain native financial services, which is basically all the activity happening on-chain as opposed to in the legacy finance these days. So using those six, we take the TAM of every bucket, and then we basically assume a penetration rate for that TAM and divide that over the estimated Bitcoin supply by the end of 2030, which is about 20.5 million Bitcoin, according to, you know, the mathematically metered issuance schedule of the network. And that gives us, when you add all that up, we get a final price forecast for Bitcoin.
So maybe we can dive in, because if I understand the work correctly, really, in all cases, you know, bear, base, and bull, the vast majority of the value is coming from two categories that you just mentioned. You have digital gold, which I think is the largest in the bear and base, and then institutional investment, which is only the leading category in the bull. So can you break down how you're thinking about the digital gold use case and the institutional investment one?
Sure. So institutional investment is the TAM on that case, particularly, is the what State Street refers to as the global market portfolio, which is basically the total investable base in the world these days, excluding gold, obviously, to avoid any double counting. So based on that, you pretty much take the whole investable AUM in the world today and remove the 3.6% of gold out of that, and that's your TAM. And we're assuming penetrations rate, I believe, between, what is it, Sam, like 2.5 to 6.5?
Yeah.
So on the bear case, let's say we would still be below the gold current share of that global market portfolio. And in the bull case, we assume a very aggressive, almost double gold's current share in that pie, basically. In terms of the digital gold use case, I think we're already kind of like seeing, you know, Bitcoin exceeding expectations when you see the launch of the ETFs last year compared to the gold ETF. We have some of this on big ideas. I think it took 12 months, or basically a year, for Bitcoin to accrue the same AUM that took about 7 years for the gold ETF. Just to give you an idea of what how Bitcoin is already like exceeding expectations relative to gold when you look back at that ETF launch versus Bitcoin's.
Is it possible, when you're looking at the ETF launch, it's somewhat hard to say whether that's digital gold or institutional investment, right? It's hard to tell which bucket that falls into. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say that AUM, as it stands today, is kind of like a mixture of both. I would say the way to think about it today, maybe this changes later on, is most institutions are thinking this as a risk on asset for now, given that it's somewhat correlated to stocks, especially since COVID, and then gold being a very like specific use case as a defensive asset in any portfolio. However, if you look at what has transpired in the markets since Liberation Day, the real start of the tariff wars, you can already see Bitcoin outperforming the S&P and the NASDAQ quite substantially. So maybe there's a shift already there. That's inconclusive for sure. But it's interesting to see regardless.
If you assume that a lot of the buyers of Bitcoin view it as digital gold, I look at the corporate treasury line here, and I'm curious, I don't know many companies that hold gold on their balance sheets. I think you have the addressable market being cash and cash equivalents. So how do you reconcile companies wanting to put Bitcoin on their balance sheet? What is the reason? And wouldn't we have seen that in a way with gold being on balance sheets? And maybe that happens and just not the companies we've been focused on.
That's a very good question, especially because I believe you don't see a lot of historical precedent for this, even with the gold standard way back in the 20th century. It just didn't happen, never happened. It was just like a cash balance and you use that to reinvest or buy back or whatever, right? But with this, I mean, several factors. One is MicroStrategy obviously like set up a completely new narrative that proved to be very good for price action on the stock and so on and so forth. So that was kind of like a new, let's say, financial innovation on their part, and people are just replicating that. There's also, you could say, the Tesla innovation, which is just holding some Bitcoin on your balance sheet as opposed to making your whole company about Bitcoin, which is the other avenue, perhaps like the most conservative, and what you would expect from a company just diversifying across assets. So I think both of those companies were kind of like innovators in some regard and in a very separate regards. That's one. I think it's just like the world is just more financialized these days, and you can like gear up new products or implementations for your company and just think about new ways to play with your balance sheet at any given time. It's just like the 21st century way as opposed to the 20th century way, if you want to call it. Right. And then the last argument I would say for that, as a store of value, Bitcoin is just better than gold. It's more nimble. And I think it aligns more with most or at least the early adopting companies towards Bitcoin, that it's just like more nimble. It's digital. You can transfer it globally and with low to little to no cost. Mm-hmm. As opposed to gold, which is heavy, old, it has more Lindy effect, but the trade-off is it's just not enough. If anything, gold is not an innovation, right? It's like something that has been with us for centuries now.
And I have just one more question on the methodology here, because I go back to when I originally started at ARK and first heard about Bitcoin, and the narrative really was, you know, digital cash, we'll be transacting with this in the future. In the methodology here, you have Bitcoin on-chain financial services. I assume that narrative is in there, but it also contributes, it seems, the least to the potential price target. So do you think the narrative around Bitcoin has changed post-ETFs, post-COVID? Is it more just an asset you hold? How do you think about that now in today's world?
Yeah, two answers to that. One is, yeah, I just think the use case, whether we like it or not, Bitcoin is going to like concentrate into what is already there in terms of giving access to people with a lot of capital. And the truth is that products like the ETFs are very accessible to people with capital. That relates to institutions and also retail as well, especially in the US markets, which hold the most capital in the world. So that's one, just accessibility is just lowest hanging fruit, and it's just easier to get there from a user interface perspective, let's say. And then the other aspect, going back to the on-chain financial services, so you don't have as much accessibility to that for sure. That's just going to be very organic growth, so we're like more conservative. In fact, if you look at the piece, the assumptions there is not a penetration rate with an already built TAM. this is an actual like growth factor that goes into CAGR for 6 years, assuming a 20%, 40%, and 60% respectively CAGR for that time horizon. So this is basically like new and like actual new financial innovation happening on Bitcoin on a layer two or around Bitcoin on, let's say, something like Wrapped BTC, which happens on Ethereum, and so on and so forth. But it's natively on chain. And this is a growth that has gone from zero to N over the last basically almost 8 years, you could say, since Ethereum started, technically. And you're already seeing like more innovations in leveraging the Bitcoin network itself to get some substantial TAM for Bitcoin layers too. So it's just like a mixture of both of those components.
Got it.
And so then, David, in this piece, you know, we talk about the bear, base, and bull, but there's actually six cases, right? You have the bear, base, and bull, and then you adjust in a more experimental methodology here with liveliness, and then you have a bear, base, and bull adjusting for that liveliness factor. And can you just explain as simply as possible to all of us what that adjustment is and you know, what merits you think it has versus the other methodology?
Yeah, so at the end of the piece, we put forward what you could call our experimental, highly experimental, liveliness adjusted price forecasts. And this is basically just saying, okay, let's assume the same TAM, the same penetration rates and growth factors that we laid out on our, let's call it official price forecast, or like flagship price forecast. But instead of dividing everything over the total estimated Bitcoin supply by end of 2030, the 20.5 million Bitcoin, we adjust that number and reduce it adjusted by something that is called liveliness, which is a very well-known on-chain metric. If you look at your usual data providers of on-chain metrics these days, you see it there. And it's basically a mathematical calculation based on turnover inside the network that assumes, if I know the holding period for every single coin in the network, which you can track live at any given time, I'm going to try to get a sense of which coins or which percentage of the total coins existing today are dormant or even lost potentially.
It's almost like a inertia adjusted float.
Yeah, right? You can consider it like out of the Bitcoin supply, what can be considered kinetic energy versus potential energy, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Assuming, right. So it's like you're in that assumption. You're saying, okay, Satoshi's coins not moving. They've never moved. They're unlikely to move.
Correct. So
if you held it for 10 years, you know it's going to take a lot to get you to do it. But if you just bought yesterday and you've traded already, then you're more likely to trade.
That's a good example. So every Satoshi coin is weighted, going back to the 15 years of Bitcoin history or whatever, and it's highly weighted as lost or dormant, almost 100% dormant, you could say. Conversely, a coin that I just traded yesterday or whatever, that is highly weighted, like 99.9% weighted to alive, or going back to the liveliness bucket of the supply. So it's highly kinetic and in movement in proportion to the rest of the coins.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you have this kind of plateauing at roughly what percent? What percent is alive versus dormant, do you think?
Yeah, so an interesting thing that we noticed starting in late 2018 is that this metric kind of found an equilibrium at 60%, meaning that 60% of the supply is active or kinetic versus the other, which is more vaulted, or, you know, the potential energy of the network, mm-hmm. and including Satoshi's coins. So basically, at that point, your denominator in the calculation here is about 40% lower, increasing right. the price forecast roughly by 40%.
Right. So it's active supply is 60% correct. Of the 21 million Bitcoins out there.
Correct. Versus yeah. the 40%
bolted. 40% that's dormant, lost, long-term holders yeah. that may never sell.
We call it bolted. If anyone wants to look at that, there's also research on that. We have published. Hmm. Yeah.
Do you think there could ever be a moment in time that causes that plateau to tick or just continue up? And were there spikes in liveliness over time, or was it just kind of consistent in a linear fashion?
That's a good question. So what we notice when we go into bull markets, bear markets, and all that stuff, usually in bull markets, liveliness tends to go up, and bear markets, it tends to go down, right? Because there's more activity and volatility in the network and more transactional mm-hmm. volume in there. However, it's by a very small margin. So it oscillates around 60%. Let's say, I don't have the numbers top of my head, but you could see in a bear market, the 60% goes to 58. And then in a full bull market, it goes to 62, 63. So it's mm-hmm. kind of like around there, gotcha. And like the mean becomes roughly 60%. This is since 2018, right? Mm-hmm. Before that, it was increasing because you had like Satoshi holding all the supply, basically, so that it was all vaulted or dormant. And then as people started to trade it on exchange, Mt. Gox and, you know, Coinbase, then you see the line of lightness go up and up. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
So to answer the question more specifically, a black swan could like
yeah.
something, but it would be something harsher than FTX because you already have that historical precedent.
Right.
It moved it, but it still was within the bounds of that 60%
range. Yeah.
So it would be something more glaring than that.
Amazing. David, thank you for joining us and walking through that methodology. I'm sure everyone listening to this is eagerly pulling up the blog to see what the numbers actually are.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, David.
ARK Investment Management, LLC, is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other. And therefore, ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.